Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. That is better. We do have sound. Welcome back to the afternoon session of issue-specific hearing number 3, which you will be pleased to hear now ought to be brief indeed. We have used the lunch break to review any matters emerging around agenda item 6, and essentially we have managed to fold everything that we had remaining there into one or other of the actions that had already been set out in the action list. So all we're going to do for agenda item 6 is we are going to review the actions arising from the action list. So that's actually agenda item 8. But just briefly before we do that, we will just look at procedural decisions. So let's just switch documents. Starting then with procedural decisions, there are two in broad terms. The first relates to the applicant's submission of documents changing the application as originally submitted, and particularly the documentation that has been submitted in relation to the removal of landfill option 2. So that's taking two bundles of change processes side by side. And the examining authority has given consideration to both sets of change proposals. And having heard views in the room, to the extent that there are no major concerns that arise from those, we have taken the procedural decision that those documents are now accepted for examination purposes. Unless anybody desperately needs that to be stated as a written document, we are happy to just have that on the record orally. So you won't see anything further in writing from us. The next procedural decision, however, ladies and gentlemen, we will set out in writing because it's actually directed primarily towards Natural England, who are, of course, not here, so they do need to see it. And our procedural decision is that Natural England should listen to the digital audio from this hearing and respond to us on all matters directed to them orally by deadline 3. That when doing so, they should initially attempt to insert their observations into existing written products, primarily statement of common ground. But if necessary, and there is no clearly agreed home for their observations, we would ask them to also produce a separate written representation at deadline 3 that advises us on the points that we raised and directed to them in a way that is clear, given that the matters raised couldn't be naturally slotted into one of the pre-existing documents. And we also then heard from Kent Wildlife Trust and National Trust in relation to an opportunity to comment on that material. And whilst we examined the possibility for inserting a further earlier deadline than deadline 4, on balance, we feel that it is in the interests of certainty for all participants in the examination to actually sustain deadline 4 as the place where comments on that occur. So, to be clear, all comments on Natural England's reduction to writing will be made at deadline 4 by the applicant and any other interested parties. Now, before I kind of finalise and formalise that, I just thought I'd check with those assembled here whether that accords with their understanding of what we had agreed and that we're all clear what we need to do and by when. Kent Wildlife Trust, National Trust, Dover District Council, if it affects you, and the applicant. Everybody is in agreement. So that is a procedural decision and that will be confirmed in writing as soon as we can after the closure of today's hearing. That draws me then into the next agenda item. We are out of agenda item 7 and we're into agenda item 8. And now I'm just going to very briefly run through orally the actions just so that we ground truth ourselves and make sure that we are asking you what we thought we were and that you indeed are doing the things that we had expected you to do. Firstly, in relation to the possible need for a recheck on figures in Appendix 1 Annex B to the Deadline 1 submission from the applicant, this is what is referred to in the examination library as REP 1-023, just to make clear that we are on the same page and in the same document. And what we are asking the applicant to do is to review figures in the document with particular reference to Table 7, because we would like to be assured that the applicant is content that the revised figures are accurate. And indeed, we are making the opportunity available for any other interested parties that, given that we are looking at figures that relate to the volumes of material arising from cable trenching, that that those figures are broadly agreed by all parties and that everybody is content that the overarching assessment of impact is not changed. Are we all on the same page there?
Scott Lannis for the applicant. So our note from the morning session referred to tables 8 and 9.
Apologies, I think that might have been a slip of ours. Are you prepared to accept table 7? Because looking back on it in the break, we were also equivalently scratching our heads.
We're perfectly prepared to accept table 7. So we may not have an immediate answer for you now.
No, don't worry.
But we certainly noted that as an action point. And as I said earlier, we need to review disposal volumes being reflected in the DCO, and we'll wrap that up into that process.
And we're content with that by deadline 3. It would be utterly unreasonable in the circumstances to ask you to provide a detailed response extemporally. And apologies for the slight confusion. I think we may have mistranscribed a note about the origin of the table.
Yes. Sir Scott Lannis, the applicant, just so we make this as effective as possible, are you able to say what the nature of the concern is about Table 7?
Essentially, it arose from comments initially by an advisor in our environmental services team who was reviewing the order of change in the figures. They're large numbers in Table 7. As distinct from the original figures that, if I recall, were, you know, factor of 5 smaller or even smaller than that. Just being clear that the order of change reflects your accurate intention.
Yes.
And then just being finally clear that if it does, that your final conclusions on environmental impact are absolutely based clearly on the correct figure, and that we aren't in a world where we end up thinking, well, hang on, do we have to reappraise the underlying environmental impact position?
Yes.
I don't think we do, but nevertheless, given that this was drawn to our attention, we did feel that it was worth doing a little audit work to actually check it. And given that, again, it's being ventilated in a hearing, which seems to be the sensible thing to be done, that anybody else who wants to run their own little parallel check is, of course, entirely at liberty to do so.
Scott Lannis, applicant. Thank you very much, sir. We will do that.
Okay, excellent. Right, the next one that we had on our list related to the conversation that we were having with Kent Wildlife Trust, where we were asking if they could draw our attention to the impacts of existing cable crossings in Pegwell Bay, particularly the Nemo cable connection, and the degree to which that had already left Salt Marsh in Kent Wildlife Trust's view in an unsatisfactory condition. There is ongoing harm. And then the final question, to document the degree to which that adverse effect has, in your view, been factored into the applicant's assessment of the proposed development?
Alice Morley, Kent Wildlife Trust. Is it okay if we talk about any other adverse impacts, so not just on the salt marsh, but any other adverse impacts on the site that may have been caused by NEMO or other cables?
I certainly think it is within scope to look at other cables, because essentially what we're trying to test here is the view that this is a robust environment that is relatively easy to pass a cable landfall through without enduring harm. So if you want to go beyond NEMO, and there are other examples that we're unaware of that you can draw our attention to and draw the applicant's attention to, that seems to be fair. In terms of talking about the wider impacts of NEMO other than salt marsh, I think really that's a matter for your general submissions rather than a matter to address this action, because what we're trying to basically test is the applicant's proposition that everything's all right versus your proposition that you think the passage of cables through that environment has caused enduring harm.
Okay.
And we're just trying to get an evidence-based measure of where we think we land on that one. So if we could confine it to that, that would be much appreciated. Okay. If we can then look at an action for the applicant, the Thanet Offshore Wind Farm Cable Replacement Project, a final on-the-record confirmation that that project is no more. Okay, if we can then move on. We asked for the National Trust and Kent Wildlife Trust to set out specific policy basis for objections to site selection conclusions and impacts for HRA purposes. We've had oral submissions from the applicant, and we also want to place a written... I mean, that will just be part of your reduction to writing, so it's not a new thing, but just to flag that, yes, we would like those oral submissions also reduced to writing. So for the National Trust and Kent Wildlife Trust, we're asking you to go a little further than you went in the hearing, because we actually want chapter and verse. For the applicant, we want a statement of where you believe you are. We also would like the applicant, through the framework of the Statement of Common Ground process, to have a conversation with Natural England about site selection and alternatives in relation to implications for HRA purposes. This, you'll recall, relates to a view that if matters that were raised by National Trust and Kent Wildlife Trust are the matters of concern, if the argument was that they did not specifically relate to particular relevant features of a site for HRA purposes, that therefore, in your submission, it did not open up the HRA site selection book, for want of a better description. Now, you know, you've given us oral submissions on that, but we would have liked to have asked Natural England for their view as their custodians of that system. So if you can pass that one on through SOCG, that would be very useful. Then moving on. By the way, these are all for deadline three. I'm not I'm not saying any other deadline unless there is another deadline. Landfall options. The applicant was just going to give us a brief note, which again it can append to its reduction to writing from this hearing, confirming the basis for its need to retain optionality, trenching as well as HDD. The applicant, in relation to Nemo cable crossings onshore, is going to document potential crossing solutions progress, both in summary technical terms and also in terms of options for securing. Is there anything that needs to end up in a certified document or on the face of the order?
Scott Leonard for the applicant. Yes, sir. I think the mention was also made about the statement of common ground reflecting discussions on the nature of vehicles that may already be crossing.
You are correct.
Right.
I will add that to our note because we did ask for that orally and it didn't end up in the note. Okay, thank you very much. The applicant was going to return one more time to the RSPB to see if there could be any final conclusion of a slope to common ground.
Sean Leake for the applicant. Purely for administrative purposes, when we go back to RSPB, can I check if they've had a response from the planning inspectorate at all to the letter that they issued in response to the Rule 8 and Statement of Common Ground reply from January this year?
If they've had any response?
They issued a letter to...
Ah, okay, so a letter in addition to their relevant rep.
Yes, so they issued a letter. I think I've just lost it off my screen. It's really out. Oh no, here we go. So they issued a letter to which I was in CC to the Thanet Extension at PINS website for the attention of Mr. Smith regarding Statement of Common Ground and just detailing that they didn't feel they had the resource for the matters that we discussed earlier. I just wanted to check whether they've had a response that we can say either further to your response or in lieu of any response, can we get further clarification?
Okay.
Yeah, we've got that's not published as a submission on our website.
It's not published as a submission. Okay. Well, we will have to look into that at our end. I think probably the best thing that we can do is to take that one on notice and use a small section of a subsequent hearing this week just to.
Yes, or the alternative route, Sir Scott Leonard, the applicant, is as we go back to RSPB, we can ask whether or not anything was received from the planning authority and then work that into any document which we prepare as a result.
Okay, now.
Have you got the date? Can you confirm the date of that letter? I want to make sure we're referring to
the same. Sean Leake for the applicant. It was the 21st of January. Just the email was to the Thanet Extension website.
Thank you.
Email address. Sorry.
Thank you.
Don't close it. Because I think I might need it. Because mine's frozen. Can I just borrow your screen for a second? thank you. Yeah, no, the perils of electronic processes. My screen has just decided to freeze. I'll just borrow that for 2 seconds, if that's okay, because we're nearly done. Kent Wildlife Trust were going to document any specific concerns they had about impacts on bird species in the intertidal zone in relation to the carrying out of HDD, and also to document any specific mitigation measures in the OLEMP, essentially setting out in clearer detail their basis for any residual or remaining concerns. Is that good by deadline 3? Now, we're specifically asking Natural England, and they're not here, but I will put it on the record so they hear us ask it, to clarify in relation to the HRA position, after discussions with the applicant in the Statement of Common Ground process, does Natural England disagree with the applicant and consider that there are any remaining instances of adverse effect on integrity for the project alone and or in combination for any site or feature? And then please list the remaining exception sites and features. This is to try and move us from the position that we currently are in, where we understand them to be in disagreement with you on those that we've discussed today, to truth your suggestion that by deadline 3, potentially there will be none. But we want to hear it from them. Okay. No, that wasn't the problem. Sorry, can I just return to your screen again? No, I need that document. Thanks. Okay. The applicant is going to consult Scottish Natural Heritage in relation to St. Abb's Head SPA. Natural England is going to integrate any remaining concerns in relation to the SIP into the Statement of Common Ground. Second action in relation to the SIP, MMO confirmed agreement to be named as a consenting or as the consenting body and to provide any views on their preferred wording for DML conditions or a condition. Kent Wildlife Trust again. Thanet Coast and Sandwich Bay, Ramsar integrity concerns. In relation to salt marsh impacts, you were going to just give us a final, clear, succinct summary document of those. The applicant had agreed to provide a single document, Ready Reckoner, on monitoring, similar to that produced for mitigation. I say correcting my earlier brain seizure. I trust we are on the same page. Now, PMCZ impacts. The MMO are going to review the marine license position on the timing and physical location of the Dover Western Docks Revival Project Goodwin Sands dredge, with a view to giving us advice about whether there is any possibility of temporal or physical or both overlap between that project and the proposed development. And if the applicant, liaising with the MMO or directly itself, provide us a plan showing the location of the dredge element of the Dover Western Docks Revival Project, geographically relative to the application proposal. Yes. And then finally, you'll be very pleased to hear this is the final one. Kent Wildlife Trust were going to more specifically document what we referred to as a wish list for the formal post-construction monitoring, particularly of fish, shellfish, benthic ecology matters that they had sought. And to the extent that best practice was referred to, if there are particular practice examples that you'd like to draw our attention to, then annex those to that submission. That, I believe, ladies and gentlemen, is everything. Does anybody think we've left anything out?
Sir Scott Lyon, for the applicant. It may not be a specific action point, but there was reference made to updating the DML to link this question of geophysical monitoring with the reef plan, and as Mr. Leake identified, and we'll include that as a as an action point. It may be something that's covered as part of the DCO session in any event. That was the first point. The second point was, I think you requested a note on the precise nature of the grid connection at Richborough substation.
Yes, we have forgotten that, so yes.
Yes, and that was to deal with the technical problems resolved and any land use information that arose from that. And finally, I think, without wishing to create more work for the MMO, we had noted that there was going to be a task where they were going to provide some information on the legislative provisions that could be relied upon to enforce cessation of works.
Yes, and this was particularly cessation of works in relation to piling.
Driving, yes.
Should the noise assumptions
exceed
that was predicted?
Yes.
Proposition that there was a generic power here, and therefore we don't have to have anything in the order or in a construction environmental management plan or any other such document, because there's a general power and you can ask them to stop anyway. Great. Well, on that basis, I think we have come to the end of that exercise. So I'm then just going to turn finally to the end of the agenda. The actions address the next steps, and sadly, with very little time left to do them, but nevertheless, hopefully everybody's clear about what needs to be done next. Yes, MMO.
Sorry, I was just jumping in now on the reviewing of the actions. Sorry, it's Lisa Southard from the MMO. I think we had a few open points on benthic and on fish that weren't related to the HRA. I think most of the benthic points can probably be covered off now with the updated coral reef plan. And actually maybe with some of the proposed wording it discussed about making it clear with the drop-down video and the ground truthing, I think we'll probably close off some of that subject to seeing what's proposed. We had an open point about uncertainty around the long-term effects on the benthic environment from turbid wakes. I think we had suggested maybe about putting together some like a summary of evidence from Thanet, which I think you'd referenced, and maybe some of the other local offshore wind farms, such as Kentish Flats. Can you hear me okay? It's a bit...
Not very well.
No, it's the sound has...
It's gone a bit twinkly.
..gone very top-endy. I'm getting a little bit of feedback. That sounds... No, I'm still getting a little feedback. Sorry, would you mind repeating that last point? I think it probably won't have recorded properly.
Yeah, you just got a bit of a... Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. We raised the point about the uncertainty around the long-term effects, and I think we suggested about maybe sort of putting together a summary of evidence to basically for MMO to consider the sort of balance of evidence to understand what the long-term impacts might be on the benthic environment. And I just wanted to, I guess, check that if that's something that we can maybe discuss either out of here or to understand what your position is now. And the other point I had was around the underwater noise modelling for fish and herring spawning, and we'd requested modelling of the cumulative sound exposure levels based on a static receptor. And I just wanted to get an update on whether the applicant was planning to provide that in relation to the herring spawning grounds.
Now, in relation to those points, I mean, to be clear, they are matters capable of emerging in the Statement of Common Ground process, which I think is probably the best place to have that conversation. I mean, there are a considerable number of matters that we didn't specifically ask questions on, which we took the view that they were either between two parties matters that didn't probably need to engage the rest of the room, and so we were either going to see how they went with a view that if they got resolved, they got resolved, and if they didn't, we were going to pick them up in EXQ2, which is where those were. Would you be happy to have a quick conversation with the applicant offline and embed those back into the Statement of Common Ground process, if that can
I'm
be achieved?
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
Scotland and the applicant, yes, we're content to deal with it in that way, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. In which case, is there anything else that we need to cover off in next steps? No. So I will now bring this hearing to a close. Ladies and gentlemen, I note that we are due to start issue-specific hearing 4 in just 8 minutes' time. Are there people here in attendance for that hearing yet? Yes, sir. Yes. Could I ask you to bear with us and allow us an additional 10 minutes, 15 minutes, let's say. If we start at 10, let's say we will start at 10 past 3, which is 10 minutes later than originally scheduled, but I think we'll just give everybody sufficient of a breather to fall out of one set of subject matters and climb into another. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Cheers.